Happy to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. And as I said, we're going to take a look at the issue of women, Wisconsin's uninsured children and families, and a couple of guests for you today. Roberta Ripertella is a professor in the UW-Madison School of Human Ecology and UW Extension Health Policy Specialist. She is project director of something called Covering Kids and Families Wisconsin, and we'll be talking about that project with her and also with Rick Clemmy. Rick, professor and dean of the University of Wisconsin Cooperative Extension Program. Rick, nice to have you back. Thank you for being with us today.
Thanks, Larry. This is another opportunity for us to showcase some of our work in cooperative extension that relates to public policy. So we're looking forward to a good conversation today.
And Roberta, thank you so much for being with us as well. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for inviting me, Larry.
What's the tell us a little bit about this Covering Kids and Families project. What's it all about?
Well, Covering Kids and Families started back in 2003. It was a Robert Wood Johnson-funded initiative, and they chose to give money to every state as an extension of a project that was called Covering Kids. So this was their second go-round. Every state was asked to submit a proposal and to work with a statewide coalition to help children in that state get enrolled in whatever their state's children health insurance program was. And for us, this is our Badger Care program.
Mm-hmm. And we received some money to go ahead and work on that.
Yeah, we did. We received about $900,000 from Robert Wood Johnson for what was a four-year project. That just ended last February 1st. And we were able to also bring down additional monies from the federal government because the work we do is mostly outreach. Mm-hmm. And working closely with the Wisconsin Department of Health and Family Services, it qualified for federal match money for Medicaid outreach. So we brought in an additional $350,000 on that one. And then starting in really March of last year, we've been able to get other grants to sustain us as a coalition. But the Robert Wood Johnson funding part of that is now gone. So we are a self-sustaining statewide coalition.
And that's pretty good business, pretty good work there, Rick Clemmy.
Well, what it does, it shows what the investment that the state makes in a university system can bring you in terms of leveraging funds to achieve educational goals. And goals that are important to the citizens of the state. So Roberta, like many of her colleagues in the School of Human Ecology and the College of Ag and Life Sciences on the Madison campus, are experts at this and building a program around, I think, Roberta, it's safe to say, sort of a broader initiative with respect to sort of health care in general. Mm-hmm. Is what you've been able to do here.
Yeah, in fact, Covering Kids and Families was somewhat limited by what Robert Wood Johnson funding would allow us to do, and that was basically trying to connect all eligible children and family members to whatever the health insurance program was in the state. We as a coalition have much broader issues regarding who's actually eligible, what the barriers are for people getting enrolled, and other issues having to do with health in general. And having a working statewide coalition allows us to look at a broader perspective, and particularly as we go for funding sources outside of Robert Wood Johnson that are allowing us to do different kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. I haven't given the numbers yet, so let me do that right now. If you'd like to join in, have a question as we move along here, feel free at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or in Madison, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Just in terms of numbers here, how many children and how many families are we talking about in Wisconsin who are uninsured?
We're estimating just under 100,000. About 98,000 is the last report out of the Department of Health and Family Services. We think that children are uninsured and that almost 70% of them are probably eligible for one of our family Medicaid programs.
Wow, that's a 100,000 children.
Yeah, 100,000 children.
Why are 70,000, let's say, just to use a round number here, 70,000 of them eligible but not taking part?
The whole issue of how people enroll can be complicated. Families also are think of it this way. Actually, the good thing about Badger Care is that it includes parents. And the reason why we did that in our state when other states didn't is there's good research evidence to suggest that when you enroll parents, you're more likely to get children. And that's because parents are more likely to want to be sick. The kinds of illnesses that kids have are fairly acute, short. They could take them to the ER, get a little bit of medicine. They don't think about preventive health care. They don't think about the health checkups that kids can be getting. So there's less pressure on families to insure children. They don't understand yet all the benefits of having that insurance. The other thing that's gone on that we've seen in research is that you have a lot of very poor families who live extremely complicated lives. And they're basically dealing day to day. They're worrying about whether or not they're going to be able to pay their rent. They're worrying about possibly being evicted. Somebody's lost a job. To actually sign up for health insurance in that kind of a context, you're really expecting a lot of people. It's just, it's complicated.
Yeah. And so under those complicated kinds of conditions, then how then, through covering kids and families, for example, have you been able to overcome some of those obstacles?
Well, one of the things that we do is just general outreach. We've had back-to-school fairs. We put things in backpacks. So some of it is very much an informational event. And we do that in lots of different ways throughout the state. But we don't believe that that's really sufficient because people can be told things, but unless you sort of lead them by the hand to help them through the enrollment process, they maybe aren't as likely to enroll. So we're putting a big push in different places right now. One of our grants has us in 10 different school districts in the state where we're trying to partner with the free and reduced price lunch program. At the time, the eligibility, which is 185% of poverty for the current standing Badger Care and for free and reduced price lunch, allows us to say, let's target these families. They're definitely probably eligible. Mm-hmm. And let's go into some school fairs. Let's get some laptops in there. Let's help these people actually enroll in the program when they're coming to a different school event. So we're testing out lots of different ways because we're not sure. Mm-hmm. What's going to work.
Yeah.
So we have large outreach projects going on, more hands-on assistance for those families, and then a large evaluation plan to see whether or not that really gains us that much more enrollment.
Mm. And now cooperative extension, this is a cooperative extension project, is it not, Rick Clemmie?
You know, Larry, I think it's a cooperative extension program, but as Roberta points out, this is part of a coalition. And extension is providing the educational resource for the coalition, educational programming that increases awareness of the program that's available. We ought to be taking advantage of what's made available to citizens and people in this state, making people more knowledgeable about that and helping to change decision-making about this program, not only among the people who really do need to sign up, but those who can help enable people to sign up as well. I think like a lot of public investment programs that people see as being, wow, we're spending a lot of money, I think you ought to look at the payback on these programs in terms of what it means to have people with health insurance in terms of their ability to learn as children, their ability to function as adults, their ability to contribute to our economy. So in a roundabout way, this is really an important investment that Roberta and her colleagues are involved in the state. Roberta's probably also connected throughout the state through our county offices as well, not only our family living agents, but our nutrition educators as well in terms of some of these projects too.
Yes, we have had a lot of involvement, particularly in our back-to-school efforts, with our county family living agents who helped to get out that information. And some of them are actually participating with us in working with the school districts, trying to get us our foot in the door and basically coordinating what happens in that local school district. And, yeah, of course, there are the nutrition educators out there who, particularly at the WIC sites, have been able to learn a little bit more about what Badger Care is and how they can help in the enrollment process. So that we've been out there doing Medicaid trainings about eligibility, and some of our county partners have gone to those trainings so that they know what to do to help families enroll.
I'll just get back to that WIC for a minute because some people might not understand that acronym. What's that acronym stand for?
Women, Infant, and Children, and it's a nutrition program to make sure that young moms and their babies are well-nourished. And you may want to talk a little bit more about how extension's involved with that program through nutrition.
Well, we have our nutrition educators throughout the state. This whole program, a nutrition education program, is funded through federal dollars. And this is designed to, as Roberta talks about, basically increase the awareness and knowledge and decision-making around good nutrition. What it means, as I talked about earlier, in terms of people's ability to perform well in schools, to learn well, to have healthy lifestyles. It really ties into a broad set of objectives that the Family Living Program in Cooperative Extension has around healthy families.
Yeah, it makes sense. Well, this has been going on now for about 3.5 years, the program?
Well, 4 years for Covering Kids and Families, funded by Robert Wood Johnson, and now going on 9 months with this other new project.
With the new project. How do you feel about the first 4 years of the project? How did things go?
In general, very positive. We made some really good connections. I think there's a lot of good educational material out there. We have a very well-respected website that, in fact, Robert Wood Johnson showcased at a national convention, because we have good information up there about Badger Care, about the kind of outreach efforts we have. We put information up there about the policy work that we do. Members of our coalition are involved in a number of committees working at the state level to try to minimize the barriers to enrollment. And we've worked on getting some new groups, not necessarily covered, but to make their enrollment process a little bit easier. So we feel good about those things that have happened process-wide. In terms of an overall evaluation, we were trying to look to see what was happening with enrollment and was our work actually helping. Unfortunately, something happened in 2004 where our state was originally having increased enrollment continually since 1999 when Badger Care started, and new rules were put into place in January of 2004 that we saw a precipitous drop of almost 50,000 people enrolled in Badger Care. And so they were administrative rules having to do with getting the current health insurance verified and income verified.
And we can talk some more about that with our two guests, Roberta Rippertella and Rick Clemmy, here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look now at the issue of Wisconsin's uninsured children and families with our two guests, Roberta Rippertella, professor in the UW-Madison School of Human Ecology and UW Extension. She's a health policy specialist. Rick Clemmy, dean of Cooperative Extension, our guest as well, to talk about the programs that Co-op Extension's been involved with here to sort of help families who aren't insured, don't have health insurance, to get that health insurance. And you'd like to join in with a question or comment, you're most welcome at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call and we'll get to our callers here in just a second. But I want to go back. Roberta, we were talking a little bit about evaluating what had gone on so far and some changes in Badger Care, if I'm not mistaken, in 2006, I'm sorry, 2004, yeah. Led to some problems.
Yeah, we lost 50,000 enrollees in Badger Care because of some new administrative rules, and it's been a slow process to get them back. But you can imagine that if you're in the field trying to work on outreach and something happens externally to you, mm-hmm. it's like you're starting from ground zero again. But the state has been doing a good job of potentially getting some of those people back on the rolls that really were qualified, but they couldn't get the paperwork documentation from their employers, which is really where the barrier was. So
okay.
It's just hard to see what effect we had when something so major happened to
right
discourage, to discourage enrollment.
Well, let's go to Kate in Menominee. Kate, hello. Thank you very much for calling.
Thank you. Thank you for the program. I was just calling with a question and a comment. My comment is I'm an employee of Head Start in western Wisconsin here, and I agree with a lot of the things that your guest has said about families and the hard time they have with signing up for Badger Care. However, with Head Start, we have a comprehensive dental and health component that we, you know, have parents sign up. When they sign up and enroll, they have to have their health, their immunizations, and then we do rural dental health. So my question is, what people we and to qualify, they have to be at 100% of poverty, not 180 like WIC. So we're seeing the poorest of the poor, and a lot of our clients do have Badger Care. So I'm wondering what sector of the population isn't getting to sign up.
Well, as you just said, that you're dealing with people that are 100% of poverty and below, and oftentimes they are interacting with our social services, local economic support offices for all sorts of reasons. But a lot of the people who aren't enrolled are probably children in working class families that are under 185% of poverty. So these are families where both parents are actually employed but are working for employers that don't offer health insurance benefits. And they're not usually as involved in the social services support system in counties.
Okay, I understand that, because I was thinking most of our families come in with Badger Care. But I was also going to say Head Start is a good outreach. We have parent meetings, and, you know, our parents come to the center, and if you want to get to, you know, get the word out too, Head Start is a good place for outreach.
In fact, unfortunately, we were just turned down on a grant that would have had us collaborating with some Head Start offices. So we'll go out looking for funds elsewhere, because I agree with you. To reach families in places where they already are working and to work with those staff to make sure that they understand how to help families enroll makes a lot of sense. And so we'll continue to look for those opportunities.
Okay. And to your credit, someone did come about 3 or 4 years ago to talk to us about Badger Care. So I appreciate all you're doing, and thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234, or in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890. Give us a call. Let's go to Alex in Wauwatosa next. Alex, hi to you. Thanks for calling.
Hello, Larry, and hello to the guests. I'm home from work today, so I get to call into a WPR show that I really, really, really like.
Oh, thank you.
Two questions. Number one, is the current S-CHIP impasse in Washington compromising our children's health care initiative here in Wisconsin? That's number one. Number two, reimbursement for children's mental health care is a huge problem. Title 19 Medicaid is just, it's literally pennies on the dollar. And there are very few, if any, private practice child psychiatrists who accept Title 19 Medicaid. They just can't. It's more to do the paperwork than to get reimbursed. I know Children's Hospital of Wisconsin has about 100 referrals a week for child psychiatry, and almost, you know, the great majority, maybe almost all, are Title 19. Is there any thinking about increasing reimbursement for child psychiatry? And I'll listen on the air. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Roberta, we'll turn to you.
Okay, Alex, some really good points. Yes and no on the S-CHIP.
What
impasse.
Is the S-CHIP?
S-CHIP is the State Children's Health Insurance Program that allows our Badger Care to be funded. And as Alex knows, and others may as well, there has been an impasse. President Bush has finally signed some legislation that will allow us to continue funding of these programs, but not to the extent that the legislators had been hoping for. It will not compromise us in Wisconsin right now. The main thing to understand is we are right now moving into a new kind of program called Badger Care Plus, and we can talk about that a little further later, but that we are set in this state to fund that both with state funds and with federal funds. And all of these S-CHIP programs are matching programs. States were allowed to put forward proposals back in the late 90s that would have either extensions of their Medicaid programs, which were always federal, state matching kind of funded programs, or to have freestanding programs. Our state and many others did this as an extension of Medicaid. Alex's second question about reimbursement for mental health is a very important one, and it's not just mental health, it's dental health as well. We do not have providers in this state who are really willing to serve this population for either dental services or mental health care services at the kind of reimbursement rates that are out there. Physicians are willing to, even though the reimbursement rates aren't that great for them either, and there's a longstanding history behind that. But it calls into question the issue that having insurance is really not sufficient, because insurance is only part of the access. So while I do care that people at least have the kinds of insurance policies that are available to them, I am well aware of the fact that there are access problems that are geographic problems, people who can't get to doctors who are close to them, that are problems with not having providers willing to serve this population. There is a variety of cultural barriers out there, language barriers, so that insurance doesn't solve the whole problem of people really having adequate health care access. And that doesn't even address the fact that a whole lot of what's going on here is communities not being able to create healthy environments for their population. So health care is only sort of like the end part of that whole equation.
Alex, thank you. Appreciate it very much. Randy in Bloomington, it's your turn. Hi, Randy.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good.
So I have probably two questions, I guess. One, I have a defibrillator, pacemaker, plus I've been diagnosed with long QT syndrome, which my son had and passed away here 2 years ago. And we were on Badger Care for that period, and they come up with this premium, and with my disability, we just can't make that payment. Now, we've been talking with social services and other people, but they basically say you don't come up with the premium, you don't get coverage. But on the other hand, you got farmers out there with two farms and that are able to get Badger Care with their income and that and assets, but I guess I just quite understand.
All right. Roberta, to you.
This is an unfortunate problem, Randy. The way the rules are set up for eligibility, at certain income levels, you do have to pay a premium. And one of the things that threw people off in 2004 was that increase in the premium. And I don't know that there's anything other than a policy solution for this, because you're right. I don't know the specifics of your case, and it sounds like you've been working closely with those who do, that these are the way the criteria are set up, and certain people are eligible, and there are certain premiums. In the new Badger Care Plus program, there are also going to be a lot of copays. So it's not going to be as easy. It's not going to be free care. And it's not going to be as easy for people, or they're going to make what they would say is consumer choices about whether or not this is important enough, because money is going to have to come out of their pockets.
Well, now, tell me about Badger Care Plus. You mentioned Badger Care Plus, and we've got Badger Care. Is Badger Care Plus, it doesn't sound like it's going to make any difference in Randy's situation. How does Badger Care Plus differ from Badger Care?
Badger Care Plus is a new extension of our Badger Care program. It's going to go in place on February 1st. People can start applying for it. And it is going to sort of subsume, is that the right word, all of the other family Medicaid programs under it. So we used to have something called Healthy Start or AFDC Medicaid. We're going to get rid of all those categories, and it's going to be much simpler. Everybody who fits under a certain income level is just going to be eligible. There are new categories of people being added. In fact, regarding Randy's comment about farmers, for the first time, we're going to be raising the income limit where self-employed parents are going to be eligible under 200% of the poverty level. So that's an increase from 185%. Children, families can enroll their children regardless of their income. So if you're a family that chooses to stay unemployed but you want to put your child in this program, you will be able to, but you will have to pay a premium to do it. We're going to have extension for pregnant women up to 300% of the poverty level. So depending on, there's still going to be categories of people, and it's going to expand basically to at least 200% of the poverty, which is over where we've been at 185%, and some up to 300%, and then children at no limit. The thing that happens, though, is that there's now two different plans. There's a standard plan, and then there's a, I'm blanking on the name right, it's a benchmark plan. And so if you're under 200% of poverty, you have all the copays that are associated with the standard plan. If you're over 200% of poverty, you have the benchmark plan, and there are more copays and higher premiums for that. But all of this has really been an attempt by the state to try to make health insurance as affordable as possible without having it be totally free, because we pick up the bill, and it's just it's been too hard to do that. So it's not perfect. But it is. I'm very excited about this opportunity to expand coverage to new families, particularly to farm families. And I will be working closely with our ag agents in getting out educational information about those families who may now actually be eligible.
Well, then, if somebody like Randy, it sounds like he's falling through the cracks because he makes...
He's actually not falling through the cracks. It sounds like he's eligible for BadgerCare, but what he can't do is come up with the premiums that they're requiring of him. So it's, you know, we have a program, but there are costs associated with it, and we may not fully understand the implications for families out there, particularly a family who's on disability. And I don't know how to solve that unless we change the program.
Yeah. Tough situation to be in, though, if you're in a situation. What would be the cost, let's say, of somebody who could put their child on the program, just to give it doesn't have to be the exact cost, but what would it cost?
Well, the monthly premiums for a family just over 200% of poverty is going to be $10 a month.
Okay.
That's not terribly high, but then there's a whole bunch of copays so that each drug is $5. Each physician visit is $15. If there's an inpatient hospitalization, it's $100. But then everything else is covered. So compared to what the costs might really be, this is certainly a step in the right direction, but it is not totally free care. So people are going to have to save some money to pay for their own health care as well.
Yeah.
And for families that are, you know, got kids, have them in child care, maybe have transportation costs, I don't know how much flexible income there is.
Yeah, Rick, you wanted to add to that a little bit.
Well, just to add that the role here that we're trying to fill from an education point of view, from cooperative extension's point of view, that Roberta and her colleagues around the state are trying to do is to try to sort out the details of programs like this, put it in an educational format, try to make it as accessible as possible, either directly or through other providers or other educators, partners. There are relationships with other organizations that our county agents have. So this is a fairly complicated process, and we need somebody of Roberta's skill sets to be able to sort all that out and put it in a way that people can learn. Very challenging.
Yeah, it is. Well, good luck to you, Randy. I thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call, and I want to give some others a chance to get on here. So let's go to Joe in Eagle River next. Joe, hi to you. Thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I have a question regarding eligibility for BadgerCare for a mom and dad who are divorced but have 50-50 custody of their child.
I believe that they are both eligible and the children are eligible, depending on income levels.
Okay. It actually... I was calling regarding our daughter who has been told that she, for some reason, the dad got BadgerCare and that she wouldn't be eligible.
Well, one of the things that has just happened with BadgerCare Plus, and I should probably be careful because I'm not certain about this, but they have extended this to all caretaker relatives. So it doesn't even have to be a parent. A grandparent who might be taking care of children would actually be eligible if they are the primary source. If your daughter is in a 50-50 situation, it was my understanding that both parents would be eligible, and certainly under the new BadgerCare Plus expansion, that both parents should be eligible.
Will be eligible. All right.
Okay. That's very good. Thank you for your help.
Yeah, thanks for calling. And Laura in Forestville, we'll go to you next. Hi, Laura.
Hi. I just want to say that public radio rocks. I think it's great.
Thank you.
But my question is, I'm really in the dark as to what 185% of the poverty level and 200%, what is that as far as a regular
income number goal.
Yeah, I should have asked that before. Thanks, Laura, for doing my job for me here a little bit.
Okay, thanks.
All right. Thank you very much. I should have asked that question a long time back, and I didn't do it. And I'm glad Laura called and brought it up. So, Roberta, what's the word on this?
Well, let's do it backwards. The numbers I'm looking at right now says that 300% for a family of three is about $51,000. That 200% for a family of three is $34,000. So let's see, 100% for a family is probably about $20,000, but I don't have that exact number.
But it's about $20,000.
And it changes every March. The federal government releases new standards of what they consider the federal poverty level. And then that would be 100% of what they consider poverty. And then states go 200%, 300%, whatever, to qualify for a variety of different programs, not just Badger Care.
So the level that, just to get this into perspective and so that I can understand it, the level of poverty, what the federal government considers to be poverty level for a family of three would be
roughly $20,000.
Roughly $20,000.
Might be about $22,000. Now, some of the things that we may want to clarify here and that my colleagues in Extension know well and do better than I is that those numbers really underestimate what it costs a family to live. They are based on cost of living and old consumer ways of putting numbers together, and they really very much underestimate what poverty probably really is in this country. So to go up to 200% of poverty, some people would say, well, that's probably really poverty.
Okay. And I recall some old stories about how that the number originally was set, which was a long time ago, that somebody did on a napkin on an airplane on their way to Washington to give a talk. And we sort of went along with that for a long, long time. And it's obviously been refined from that. But still, it doesn't seem like $20,000 is not a considerable amount of money with three people.
No, it is not.
That's for sure. Well, you work with a lot of colleagues. You mentioned colleagues on this, and you do work with quite a few people in Extension and elsewhere even on this whole program.
Well, yeah. One of the things that I should probably acknowledge is the consumer health education team that I'm a part of in the Family Living Program. And we look at a variety of health issues. And we have a working website which houses our resources. And those colleagues have been very supportive of me and my work with covering kids and families. But they do all sorts of things, working in community on worksite wellness programs. There's a program out there called Strong Women. Certainly our nutrition colleagues who are working with families around learning how to feed themselves and how to make a budget work for being able to buy food. We have a colleague in Waupaca who's working on spills and pills, which is educating people on falls. So there's a lot of work going on in different counties supported by the Family Living Program where we're doing health education type of work. And for me, all of this is very important, as I mentioned previously, because having access to health insurance is only part of the picture of how communities can help individuals and families create health.
And before we run out of time here, too, for people who may be listening who would like some more information on these programs, where's the best place? You know, sometimes there are not a lot of people who have access to not everybody has access to a computer, but you probably have a website. Certainly, I would assume in your county Extension Family Living person would have that. Yeah, and there's a very long website. So if you go to Badger Care Plus.
No, Badger Care Plus. Well, you'd have to go to DHFS for Badger Care information. If you went to our Covering Kids and Family site, which is an easy one, Larry, that's www.ckfwi.org.
CKF?
WI.org.
WI.org. Okay. CKF.WI.org. No.
No.
CKFWI. All right. Let's get that right. CKFWI.org.
And there'll be information up there about Badger Care Plus. But you're right, for the kind of programming that my Extension colleagues are doing in counties, you can contact your local county Extension
office. County Extension office, and they're going to, the family living people there are certainly going to help you out. Well, we'll need to take another look at this. I thank you both today for being with us and appreciate it very much. And let's think about another show down the road, especially maybe after Badger Care Plus gets going and we can take another look at this. Appreciate it very much. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Roberta Rippertella is a professor in the UW-Madison School of Human Ecology and UW Cooperative Extension Health Policy Specialist. Rick Clemmy, Dean of UW Cooperative Extension. Pleased to have them with us. And thank you for listening and stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network.